And I can't make that decision on the energy and climate because it takes the taxes to pay for the investment in the clean technology that I'm in favor of.
Oh, yeah. Sure you are, Joe. Sick of his lies.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Here I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. Up in Oregon, on the Central Coast, on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania, on WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, Columbus, Ohio's WGRN. Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and all your favorite podcast sites, amongst other fine affiliate stations. Blanketing Planet Earth, 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. In truth, I really do not relish these I-told-you-so moments.
I know.
I don't. I really don't.
Yep.
Hi, Desi.
Hi.
That's Desi Doyen. She's our producer.
Yes.
We're glad she's here. Anyway, I don't relish these moments, but I got to tell you, this is one of those moments. Ever since Joe Manchin blocked Joe Biden's massively progressive Build Back Better bill last year, which would have expanded health care access, child care tax credits, elder care, education, lowered prescription drug prices, taxed the wealthy to pay their fair share, and unleashed landmark climate initiatives to take on the deadly climate crisis in earnest for the first time by the federal government, by moving us toward the goal of reaching net zero carbon emissions by 2050. And even before Joe Manchin blocked that bill, I have been saying there was no way that the corrupt Democratic senator from West Virginia, whose family makes millions from the deadly, dirty fossil fuel industry, as does his campaign, I've been saying there is no way that Joe Manchin was going to allow any bill that included initiatives to move the nation away from fossil fuel and towards renewable energy. But Democrats and the corporate mainstream media kept sort of going along with this fiction that while Joe Manchin just wouldn't allow most of those other progressive initiatives to pass in the landmark $2 trillion Build Back Better bill that could have passed under Senate reconciliation rules requiring a simple majority vote, no Republicans would be needed in order to avoid a filibuster under this rule. He claimed the mainstream media and the Democrats all claimed that, oh, Joe Manchin, he won't pass that big bill, but he is interested still in a trimmed down version, maybe a $1 trillion version, getting rid of much of the original bill's initiatives, but, you know, still lowering health care prices, raising taxes on the wealthy. He was definitely in favor of that. And, of course, he was definitely in favor of these new green environmental initiatives. He's very concerned about the environment. Why do they keep repeating that nonsense? I've been saying the whole time, there is no way that Manchin was ever going to allow that. Not the climate initiatives, even as he kept saying he was so interested in them. And the corporate media kept reporting that fiction as if Joe Manchin was not completely lying about it at all. A guy who makes millions and millions of dollars from the coal industry alone. Well, now, as I said, I don't relish it, but yeah, I told you so. From Washington Post last night, Senator Joe Manchin told Democratic leaders on Thursday he would not support an economic package this month that contains new spending on climate change or new tax increases targeting wealthy individuals and corporations, marking a massive setback for party lawmakers who had hoped to advance a central element of their agenda before the midterm elections this fall. Well, who could have predicted it? Of course, this comes after months of, you know, quiet negotiations that supposedly he was sitting down with Chuck Schumer. The two of them were hashing all of this out. They didn't want to bring a lot of attention to it until it was, you know, they had crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's. But Joe Manchin was certainly going to bring forward a trimmed down bill that would include these environmental initiatives. The major shift in negotiations, according to the Post and confirmed by two people familiar with the matter, threatened to upend the delicate process to adopt the party's signature economic package 7 months after Manchin scuttled the original bill, which President Biden had endorsed along with passage by all the Democrats in the U.S. House and with the support of, well, pretty much every Democrat in the U.S. Senate except for Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Manchin told Democratic leaders he's open to provisions that aim to lower prescription drug costs for seniors, however.
Sure he is.
Well, that's what he says. So let's take him for some reason at his word. Sure, this huge landmark progressive bill comes down to one bill about drug prices. And the West Virginia moderate, as the Washington Post called him, he's not moderate, he's corrupt. He expressed support with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the party's chief negotiator, for extending subsidies that could help health insurance costs come down for millions of Americans, according to one source. We will see. That is not nothing, of course, but it is not Build Back Better. It is not even Build Back Mansion, as some have described this trimmed down reconciliation package that still may never pass at all, thanks to one Democratic senator, maybe two, and all 50 Republicans who oppose all of it. By Friday morning, of course, Manchin was already restarting the same fiction. He does this all the time. On Friday morning, he was on West Virginia local radio saying, well, he could support climate spending and tax increases, but only if economic indicators next month improve. Sure you can, Joe, but you won't. You never will. You will never support anything that would harm your pocketbook and your family's million dollar coal business that they own. End of story. And I don't know why the hell people continue to buy his BS. It is just one more reason that voters must increase the Democratic majority by at least two senators this fall if you want to see anything positive done. And that's going to be really hard, by the way, to increase the Senate majority.
And hold the House,
thanks to the damage and destruction that Joe Manchin has done to the Democratic president's landmark progressive agenda. And make no mistake, that's what Build Back Better ultimately was. And it was blocked by corrupt Democrats, Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and 50, all 50 Republicans in the U.S. Senate. And by the way, It happened even though the administration had this trimmed down bill that he has now scuttled. That came about because the administration had sort of tepidly agreed to maybe break its own climate pledges in order to win over Manchin. They were considering the expansion of drilling for oil and gas on public lands in Alaska and the Gulf of Mexico, and perhaps even allowing a new fossil fuel pipeline from West Virginia to Virginia, all in hopes of winning over Manchin. And, you know, their hope, which some environmentalists opposed, others recognized it as a necessary compromise for a greater good, was that giving Manchin some of this stuff would be in exchange for things like renewable energy tax credits that in the long run overall would decrease emissions, even with those other projects, even at a cost the cost of angering some of his of Joe Biden's environmental base. But Joe Manchin is a corrupt liar. He always has been, and he continues to undermine not just the possibility of restoring sanity and wildly popular progressive programs that the vast majority of Americans have been crying out for years, but, you know, also blocking the possibility of an actually livable world on planet Earth so that he and his family can continue to rake in millions of dollars at an unspeakable price to America and humanity itself. Other than that, welcome to the broadcast. It's another delightful day in these United States, and Desi Doyen will have more related news in our Green News Report a little bit later.
Yes.
But here's one more. Before we get there, look, hey, as Reuters reports, after exceeding $5 a gallon for the first time in history, U.S. gasoline prices are finally falling, giving relief to consumers in the world's largest user, in the world's largest user of the fuel. That would be the U.S. The average retail price for gas nationwide is still about $4.63, but that is down from a record of over $5 a month ago. Since Joe Biden was somehow blamed for that, I'm sure that he will now receive credit for the falling price of gas right now, right? Stop that. Des, are you okay? Stop all that laughing. Somebody get her a...
Yeah, that was funny.
Across the U.S., 46 states and the District of Columbia have seen declines in prices. The Midwest has seen some of the sharpest drops, with prices down over the last month in Indiana by 52 cents, in Ohio by 51 cents. So I'm sure Democrats are going to do well in both of those states this November. They will reward Joe Biden, right? Prices are on a trajectory to keep falling, at least for the next few weeks, says Reuters. Global fuel demand has been declining because of the high prices and the strong U.S. dollar. Well, that sounds terrible also. Impeach. The strong U.S. dollar, of course, makes oil more expensive elsewhere, but not here. U.S. gas prices have followed a drop in the futures market for both crude oil and gasoline. U.S. demand for gasoline, jet fuel, and diesel is down more than 10% compared to 2019, before the pandemic began. That, according to the Energy Information Administration. Gasoline stations have responded, finally, by lowering prices, even though it only took them a month or so. Because, as Desi Doyen has noted numerous times, I believe, when futures prices go up, gas prices at the pump go up immediately. But when they come down, well,
it takes weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah, big oil will get around to it eventually.
Someday.
But, you know, even while they're continuing to rake in record profits, not revenue right now, but record profits.
Pure profits.
That happens thanks to profiteering, in this case, war profiteering, as Russia's war on Ukraine has spiked those global prices on the futures market, but not nearly as much as the fossil fuel industries have raised their retail prices on consumers. Yes, you suckers. And while there is not much a president can actually do about any of that, even though he's been releasing an unprecedented number, Joe Biden has, of number of barrels, millions of barrels of oil from the strategic reserves to help lower prices by easing any supply crunch a little bit, it actually will take an act of Congress to prevent war profiteering and price gouging by big oil. On that front, you may recall a month or so ago, every single Republican in Congress voted against a bill to prevent Americans from being screwed at the pump by war profiteering, price gouging fossil fuel companies. And, well, voters may remain disinformed enough about that to actually reward Republicans for actually screwing them over this November. Though, you know, not if there's anything that we can do about it here. We try, for example, through the radical act of reporting actual news and verifiable facts on all of this. Aren't we renegades? But yeah, more on that in the GNR coming up a little bit later.
Yeah.
But first, there's this from Future Tense this week. Once again, Texas's ability to keep electricity flowing to its nearly 30 million residents is in doubt. Searing heat waves and the heightened energy use that they are spurring are stressing the state's largely unregulated energy grid to a nearly calamitous degree. On Sunday, the ironically named Electric Reliability Council of Texas,
yep,
or ERCOT, which oversees the state's power capacity, on Sunday they asked Texans to voluntarily, pretty please, cut back on their electricity use during peak demand hours. Wait a minute, didn't Republicans used to tell us we can't conserve our way out of these issues?
Why, yes, they did.
I hate remembering things. Anyway, that as temperatures in some areas across Desi's old home state rose to 110 degrees Fahrenheit.
And it's not just that they rose to 110 degrees Fahrenheit. It is that they have been over 100 degrees, 105 degrees or so for days and days in a row. And that is new.
Yeah, a record number of days in a row. Many Texans, however, are still scarred by the winter of 2021. Remember that? Remember those blackouts that occurred, cutting off power to millions and leading to hundreds of deaths amid record cold at the time, thanks to the privately run grid and the fossil fuel power plants that weren't weatherized to be able to run during cold snaps, you know, when you need them, because, you know, that would cost the fossil fuel industry money to help keep people alive and stuff. Hate to do that. The same day that ERCOT announced its latest request to pretty please cut back a little due to the record heat, with reassurances that mass outages would not reoccur, well, thousands of Travis County residents, that's Austin, the state's capital, lost power. One Texan told Fox Business, quote, "We've seen the grid go down before for heat as well as cold, and as it's warmer now, I don't see it getting any better." Well, that Texan is right. What are you going to do about it this November? Nothing? Continue to elect the same idiots you have been electing now for decades who have done this to you? On Wednesday night, Texas resident Dr. Emily Porter tweeted out, quote, "It's 95 degrees out at 10 p.m. We have been without power for over 2 hours, in case you're wondering what kind of a crap show Governor Greg Abbott is running these days." She said, "Tried to call my mom to see if she had any power. She's 25 miles away in Austin, but Verizon also had no service. I did not try 911, but I'm guessing it also didn't work. This is what happens," she writes, "in the 10th largest metro in the country that is known for tech." She said, "My husband left the garage door open for me as I was gone when power was out. She was worried that they would get another family of raccoons in the garage in the meantime, and said, 'Y'all, we pay 2.2% property taxes. Our electric bill was $336 last month.' While it's certainly not unreasonable to ask citizens to forego certain activities for the public good, some wondered whether life or death decisions involving electricity reliability should fall on Texans every single time there is a weather threat, no matter what kind, heat or cold. U.S. Congressman Eddie Bernice Johnson called it outrageous and excusable that Texans were being told their power supply could handle neither extreme cold nor extreme heat. Beto O'Rourke, who is challenging Governor Greg Abbott this November, tweeted, quote, "We can't rely on the grid when it's hot. We can't rely on the grid when it's cold. We can't rely on Greg Abbott." For his part, the Texas governor publicly praised his administration's electricity operations, stating that, quote, "The Texas electric grid is the most reliable and resilient it's ever been." Well,
that's a pretty low bar.
Well, early last year, the Texas legislature took up Abbott's call for ERCOT reform after that long cold snap that killed hundreds in Texas. And after signing some bills, Abbott claimed that, quote, "they fixed all of the flaws with the grid, and that, quote, everything that needed to be done was done to fix the power grid in Texas.
And it turns out, not so much.
Not so much. Last November, he informed a local TV station that he could already, quote, guarantee the lights will stay on. But by February, Abbott was doubling back, stating, quote, no one can guarantee that there won't be another series of power outages. As of this week, the worst appears to have been averted this week. But blistering heat will keep warming Texas all summer long, likely leading to more records in power demand, plus additional climate-linked disasters like wildfires, as electric power in Texas is getting more expensive. Meanwhile, further solutions like improved home insulation, out-of-state electricity backup, oh, there's an idea, governmental accountability from gas and electric providers, and manufacturing of more energy-efficient home appliances, well, that, none of that stuff is anywhere in sight. So, will Greg Abbott be blamed for actual failures that he actually is responsible for, as Joe Biden is blamed for failures that he is not responsible for? Will voters continue to punish Democrats for failures to take action on our climate crisis that is stressing out Texas's grid, even though it's all Republicans and one very corrupt fossil fuel sponsored Democrat from a coal state who is actually undermining the entire Democratic agenda to do something about all of this? Will Texas's Republican majority voters elect Democrat Beto O'Rourke this November instead of re-electing Greg Abbott for a third term, since O'Rourke promises to actually reform the Lone Star State power grid? Well, for now, O'Rourke is down against Abbott by about 6 points in the polling. And while he is narrowing the gap, it's still going to be a tough climb because, well, you know, Texas. And I'm guessing that voters there are lied to day and night about all of this. So we will see. Anyway, more related news on all of this, I'm told, in Desi Doyen's Green News Report a little bit later.
Yes.
I hear it's going to be, by the way, nothing but good news today in that report.
We shouldn't make any promises.
That's the word on the street anyway, Des. I don't know. What else do we have here? Oh, yes. The Secret Service. Man, this is just on Thursday night, we learned the Secret Service reportedly deleted text messages from January 5 and January 6, 2021. Nothing big going on those 2 days, as far as I know. This after oversight officials had requested the agency's electronic communications. This according to a letter that was sent to the January 6th Select Committee in the U.S. House. The Intercept first reported on this news. The Washington Post says the Secret Service, says the Secret Service maintains that the messages were deleted from the system as part of a device replacement program. But the letter issued by the Department of Homeland Security's Office of Inspector General reportedly said that the erasure of the message occurred shortly after oversight officials there had requested the agency's records. The letter reportedly does not indicate whether the DHS watchdog believes the text messages were deleted intentionally or whether there was a nefarious motive behind the move, that according to CNN. The development comes as the January 6th Select Committee continues to hold its public hearings that outline its argument that the Capitol insurrection was a multi-step concerted effort to subvert the 2020 election results, and it was carried out by former President Donald Trump and his allies. The Secret Service, meanwhile, has emerged as a focus during the January 6th public hearings. Greg Jacob, former counsel to Vice President Mike Pence, referenced the Secret Service when he testified to the committee last month about the then Vice President Mike Pence's refusal to leave the Capitol as the insurrection unfolded. Jacob testified that when the Secret Service directed Pence and his top aides to get into the waiting cars amid the attack on the Capitol, Pence would not do so. He made clear he did not want to be whisked away from the Capitol. He did not trust the fact that if he got into the car, he would not be driven away, despite his instructions otherwise. So he refused to get into that car. So what did those erased text messages to and from Secret Service members say on January 5 and January 6 about Mike Pence and that car? Was there instructions to them from, I don't know, maybe Donald Trump or his people to get Pence into that car so they could pull off the scheme they were hoping to pull off? Also late last month, Cassidy Hutchinson, you'll recall the former aide to White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, testified that she recalled Donald Trump demanding the Secret Service get rid of metal detectors at the Stop the Steal rally on the Ellipse that occurred on January 6, just hours before the insurrection, so that his armed supporters could move closer to the stage to make the crowd look bigger on television, claiming that the armed insurrectionists were not there to harm him. Any evidence to support what went on there between the Secret Service? Was that what we lost in those erased texts from January 5 and January 6? Hutchinson, at the same time, also testified about a story that she was told right after it allegedly happened that Donald Trump tried to grab the wheel of the presidential limo, and then he grabbed the neck of the head of his Secret Service detail after his remarks on the Ellipse while he was trying to demand that they drive him to the Capitol instead of back to the White House. This remarkable, harrowing story that Cassidy Hutchinson gave at her testimony, as she said was told to her, with the head of the Secret Service detail in the room when she was told this story. That was after she told it, it was then denied by one anonymous source who has never come forward, never come on record. But that denial from that anonymous source was reported by every corporate media outlet at the time. We didn't report it because it was anonymous. There was no way to back it up. There was no way to verify it in any way, shape, or form. But it was used to undermine Hutchinson's credibility at the time for not just that story, but all of the bombshells that she testified to under oath, as seen in that public hearing. As CNN reports, neither of the agents named in the testimony have commented publicly on Hutchinson's testimony, but soon after it, supposedly a Secret Service official who would only speak on background said that Bobby Engel, he was the head of Trump's detail that day, and the guy whose neck was allegedly grabbed, that Bobby Engel would deny at least parts of the story regarding Trump grabbing at the steering wheel and lunging toward the agent on his detail. The agency has said the agents involved would testify to that effect, but they have not yet gone back to the committee to testify for some reason.
Strange, isn't it?
Nonetheless, that anonymous on-background denial that was not given under oath was used to attack Hutchinson, to call her a liar, to call her a crazy person, even though she literally stuck her neck out under oath on television in front of everyone. Of course, potential texts concerning that very incident are now apparently erased as well, unless the inspector general can have them somehow reconstructed. But guess what? As CNN reported late last night, a Washington, D.C. police officer has corroborated to the House Select Committee investigating January 6 details regarding the heated exchange between that former President Donald Trump had with his Secret Service detail when he was told he could not go to the U.S. Capitol. The officer with the Metropolitan Police Department was in the motorcade with the Secret Service for Trump on January 6 and recounted what was seen to committee investigators, presumably under oath, but definitely not anonymously, according to CNN. They have also previously reported that two Secret Service sources have said they heard about Trump angrily demanding to go to the Capitol, berating his detail when he didn't get his way. The sources told CNN that stories circulated about the incident in the months after January 6, including details that are very similar to what Hutchinson described to the committee. But it's still the background denial of the story that received the most play by the irresponsible corporate media following Hutchinson's testimony. But, you know, I guess it's left to us. Who should we trust? Should we trust Cassidy Hutchinson publicly and under oath now, along with a Metropolitan Police officer reportedly under oath? Or should we trust Donald Trump, a man with an unblemished record when it comes to telling the truth, who has claimed for 2 years that his election was stolen from him despite zero evidence to suggest that it was stolen. But that has not prevented his supporters from continuing to make the case that it was. They don't care. Evidence? Never heard the word. And one of them, an actual election official, now seems to be headed to jail for it. That story is on the is next on the broadcast, along with, yes, more actual GOP election fraud. Go figure. That's all ahead today on the broadcast and the Nothing But Green News, Good News, Green News Report. That's all ahead. I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to the broadcast.
Five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
You taught her how to run, baby, run, baby, run, baby, run, baby, run.
Run, baby. Run. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Election official on the lam. So remember that Mesa County, Colorado County Clerk, Tita Peters, who snuck into her own Republican, I should note, MAGA Republican. She snuck into her own secured voting system room in the middle of the night with two other people, one of whom she made a fake ID for to get in. She turned off the security cameras and then allowed that person to make full illegal copies of their Dominion voting system's election management system software. And then she went on and spoke a few weeks later at crazy MyPillow guy CEO Mike Lindell's dumb Stop the Steal cyber forum or whatever it was he called it. And as she was speaking, Tina Peters was speaking on stage, that proprietary software that she had allowed her friend to copy, which controls everything about elections that are carried out on Dominion voting systems, that software was released to the internet for anyone in the public to download and study and learn how to steal elections in any of the jurisdictions which use Dominion voting systems, for example, like the entire state of Georgia or several large counties in California, which use the very same system, which therefore caused a panic in California because the release of this software, unlawful release of the software, happened right before last year's failed Republican attempt to recall Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom. Remember that? Remember her? The same Tina Peters who was then ordered by a state judge to not run or get anywhere near this year's elections in Mesa County as she was being investigated by state and local authorities for all of this. She was eventually indicted on 7 state felonies and 3 misdemeanors, but decided to run anyway for even higher office for the Republican nomination to become Colorado's next Secretary of State. But then she ended up coming in like 5th or something just a few weeks ago in that primary, even losing in her home county of Mesa. Remember her? Well, more crazy Tina Peters news today. According to the Colorado Sun, a judge on Thursday ordered indicted Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters to be arrested for violating the conditions of her bond by traveling to Las Vegas this week to speak at a, well, another MAGA election conspiracy conference without first notifying the court and prosecutors. Mesa County District Court Judge Matthew David Barrett issued a warrant for Peter's arrest and for her to be held in jail pending a hearing. He also revoked her $25,000 cash bond. Separately, by the way, on Monday, Peters signed a notarized letter to Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold seeking a recount of the Republican primary for Secretary of State, which she lost. But back to the main story here, Mesa County District Attorney Dan Rubenstein had agreed to let Peters travel out of state while she was running for Secretary of State after her attorneys said that she needed to do so in order to as part of her bid for higher office. Well, her travels in recent months included a trip to Mar-a-Lago in Florida, because, you know, you have to do that if you're running for Secretary of State in Colorado these days. Rubenstein filed a motion on Monday asking Judge Barrett, to require that any out-of-state travel by Peters be approved, saying that she had less motivation now to appear in court now that she is no longer a candidate. Additionally, she has evidenced, he said, through her travel prior to the election, that she has the means to flee if she wants to. Remember, she was hiding out for several weeks after all of this first occurred, after the release of her software. She was going from one secret location to another as authorities in Colorado were hoping to question her. She was going from one state to another as sponsored by MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell. So Judge Barrett agreed to prohibit Peters from traveling out of state without court approval, and then she did it anyway. Now, her attorney filed a motion on Thursday taking blame for all of this, saying that it was an oversight on his part, that the court was not made aware of Peters traveling to Las Vegas. Don't know if that's true or not. But now all of these folks are apparently turning on each other. In her speech to the group in Las Vegas, which was a conference of a bunch of right-wing so-called constitutional county sheriffs, she discussed her recent campaign and the investigations into her unlawful activities committing election-related fraud as the county clerk and her apparent dislike of Congresswoman Lauren Boebert. What?
What?
Yes, I know. Well, she has claimed that Boebert was the one who encouraged her to make digital copies of the voting systems in the first place. And on Tuesday, she claimed that Boebert had met with her, that Boebert's former campaign manager and the unauthorized person who prosecutors contend copied the machines as part of the scheme. That a spokesperson for Boebert denied both of these claims, that they had met, that she was the one who put her up to this. So a spokesman for Boebert denied both the claims to the New York Times. The Colorado Times Recorder first reported Peter's comments in Las Vegas about this. During her speech, she angrily denounced Lauren Boebert, who she said had not sufficiently supported her. Quote, "Do not clap for her. I went up to her," said Peters. "I went up to her and I said, 'Lauren, I need your support.' She bristled up, and she, when all of this started coming down, she says, 'I support all of my constituents.'" Peters seethed. "Have you heard her say anything about elections or election security? Have you? I'm coming out with the whole truth." Uh-oh. Anyway, that's what's going on with Tita Peters now. Mesa County Deputy Clerk Belinda Knisley and the former Mesa County elections manager Sandra Brown, they have also been charged in this case. Peters says she is innocent of everything, and the prosecution against her is politically motivated. She is among a slate of Republican 2020 election deniers who lost their primary bids in Colorado last month, where apparently the Republican Party has not yet in full gone insane. And in yet more GOP election fraud news from GOPers around the country who falsely claim that there was massive fraud in 2020 but can't seem to stop committing it themselves, even while running for office in 2022.
So much projection.
Republican Congressman Lee Zeldin is running for governor in New York against Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul. On his campaign website, it requests that people join, quote, Team Zeldin's Election Integrity Task Force. Quote, our team will be working around the clock now and into November to ensure we have fair elections, but we can't do it alone, the campaign website states. In December of 2020, Zeldin tweeted, quote, ballot integrity. This is December of 2020, so just after the election. Quote, ballot integrity always matters, regardless of the circumstances and regardless of whether the issue impacts one vote or thousands of votes. He recommended a series of changes, including, quote, signature verification with campaigns able to participate. His comments came as then-President Donald Trump was contesting the results of the election. Zeldin subsequently voted against certifying the results of the presidential election, despite all lack of fraud in the 2020 election. Zeldin said just last month, I'm honored to stand shoulder to shoulder with the leaders across our state who stood up for election integrity and the rule of law to put an end to it. I guess to put an end to election fraud, not election integrity. Well, now, I guess you can see where this story may be going. But last month, recall a few weeks back, I think it was last month, we reported on the massive election petition signature fraud scandal that resulted in 5 of Michigan's 10 Republicans running for the Republican gubernatorial nomination. 5 of the 10 of them were struck from the ballot. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
Including the 2 top front runners for the nomination due to this because of tens of thousands of fraudulent forged signatures that they turned in hopes of trying to qualify for the ballot. Well, guess what's happened to the Republicans nominee for governor in New York State? It's not just the Republican governor nominees in Michigan. It's also the Republican governor nominees in New York. So in New York, they allow candidates to run on several different lines on the ballot at the same time. So Kathy Hochul, Governor Kathy Hochul, the Democrat, she may be listed as the Democratic candidate. She will be listed as the Democratic candidate. She won her primary just a few weeks ago. But she's also going to appear on the ballot in the same race on the New York Working Families Party line. So she'll be listed twice there. It's weird, I know, but that's what New York does. Well, thanks to thousands of fraudulent signatures, Lee Zeldin's hopes of appearing on another party's ballot line has apparently now been scuttled by the State Board of Elections after he did win the GOP nomination last month. So he will appear on the ballot for that, but he won't appear on the state's independent party ballot line, apparently. Zeldin is unlikely to appear on that line after the State Board of Elections invalidated 13,000 signatures that were included in his petitions. 13,000. Zeldin's campaign submitted well above the 45,000 signatures that are needed to get his name on the third party line, but the disqualified signatures left him well short following the board's ruling. Now, in Michigan, when this happened, all Michigan claimed, oh, it's the Democrats on the Board of Elections who were out to get us. But here, Zeldin's petitions were challenged by officials with New York's Libertarian Party, who not only contested the signatures were invalid, but also noted that about 11,000 of them appeared to be photocopied duplicates.
Really?
11,000.
They didn't even try that hard.
Andrew Kolsty, the secretary of the Libertarian Party, said in a news release on Thursday, quote, Republicans talk a lot about election integrity, but the Zeldin campaign attempted to fly under the radar and submit over 11,000 fraudulent signatures in an attempt to get a third line on the ballot. In addition to being on the Republican line, Zeldin is also going to appear on the Conservative Party line. So he was hoping to get on the ballot 3 times on the Independent Party line. Kolsty claimed that the Libertarian Party officials and the campaign of Diane Sayre for U.S. Senate found 900 sheets with 11,000 signatures that were photocopies of the original sheets filed by the campaign. A spokesman for Zeldin's campaign said that if there was any error, it was due to the workload handled by their volunteers. Yes, blame the volunteers. Throw them under the bus who accidentally, I guess, Xeroxed hundreds of pages from totally different signature campaigns or something. Because, you know, personal responsibility, as Republicans used to pretend to believe in. Being nearly spokesman for Zeldin's campaign said, being nearly an entirely grassroots effort, we haven't reviewed all of the petitions nor the specific objections associated with them.
Even though we signed our names to it and said it was valid.
In the final few days leading up to the filing deadline, tens of thousands of signatures from all over the state had to be immediately turned in to the Board of Election. Well, it's not like they suddenly announced, okay, the deadline is tomorrow.
Surprise, they didn't.
They knew that when the, yeah, a judge could potentially overrule the State Board of Elections decision. That would leave Zeldin with an outside shot of still appearing on the independent party line. But for now, it's not looking good. The board ruled that just under 13,000 signatures were invalid. Democratic Party Chair Jay Jacobs said in a statement, Zeldin submitting 11,000 fake signatures just emphasizes his hypocrisy and proves he is willing to sell New Yorkers another big lie to benefit his failing campaign. He said, noting Zeldin's backing of Trump's election fraud concerns in the 2020 election. Other candidates who were also invalidated that sought to run on the independent party line. Zeldin was not the only one. Also, Zeldin's running mate, Republican nominee for lieutenant governor, Allison Esposito, was disqualified for fraudulent signatures, as well as the Republican candidates for comptroller, Paul Rodriguez. He was disqualified for fraudulent signatures. Republican Attorney General candidate Michael Henry was disqualified for fraudulent signatures, and U.S. Senate candidate Joe Pinion. All Republicans disqualified for turning in fraudulent signatures to get onto the ballot.
I'm detecting a pattern here.
Remember when Republicans used to be outraged that, you know, when they found an employee for Acorn had faked some voter registrations back in the day, voter registrations of phony voters who never cast any votes at all, who never cast a single fraudulent vote through one of those Acorn workers who had submitted fraudulently, who had defrauded Acorn itself by turning in those. They were outraged by it. John McCain, the presidential candidate at the time, said that this sort of thing tears at the very fabric of our democracy. Well, so much for the fabric of our democracy, at least when it comes to Republicans and their constant election fraud in state after state after state. It's unbelievable. If you're actually looking for massive election fraud, Republicans, all you got to do is keep finding mirrors. Green News Report is next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Once again, repeating our top story today, Democratic Senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin, is a lying liar who never had any intention of enacting any environmental initiatives at all that would hurt fossil fuel in any way, shape, or form, because he's corrupted by the fossil fuel companies and his family makes billions, millions at least, of dollars from the coal industry.
Yes, and I did want to add just a little bit.
Yes.
So just to keep in mind where we stand, the passage of the infrastructure law will help the U.S. meet some of its climate goals.
He allowed that to pass.
He did allow that to pass. Of course, that doesn't reduce the deficit. deficit and was not paid for. Now, the Build Back Better package...
Even though he's so concerned about the deficit and
inflation
and everything
that.
Else. Yes.
Yeah, it actually would... The Build Back Better plan would have helped with inflation a lot, and it would have gotten us about two-thirds of the way of between of where we need to be between now and 2030 that the infrastructure law doesn't cover. Executive action by Biden. He has promised that he will do that in a new statement today.
In lieu of Manchin agreeing to go along with any of this.
Correct. Yeah. So, but the sad thing is that it is very unlikely that the U.S. will be able to reach those climate goals unless Democrats hold both the House and the Senate in the November midterm elections and add at least two more seats in order to strip Republicans and Manchin and Sinema of their veto power.
Take away the power from Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema and all 50 Republicans.
So there's still a chance. It's not over yet, but that's where the roadmap is.
That's where it. We'll see if it is or isn't. That said, let's get to it. Recorded prior to the Joe Manchin news, our latest green news. Report.
We do see water shortage, we see severe agricultural impacts, we see very severe ecosystem impacts with the risk of extinction of native species and so on.
Spain and Portugal hit with driest climate in more than 1,000 years. Yes, summers are getting hotter, longer, and more dangerous in the United States. Plus,
this is extremely bad news.
Deforestation in the Amazon rainforest hits new all-time record high.
All of that extremely bad news and maybe even worse, all straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Wait, what? The Supreme Court ruled that the Environmental Protection Agency does not have the authority to protect the environment? So what is their job now? It's going to look at the environment and be like, oh, shit! All right, that was a good day at work. You guys want to get some drinks?
That's about it. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess this is what suffices for some good news today?
Yes, global crude oil prices have fallen over the last month, and U.S. retail gas prices are finally reflecting it. Mm. AAA reports that retail gas prices, the primary contributor to inflation, have fallen across the country after the July 4th holiday. The national average has dropped 34 cents in just the last month. But don't worry, ExxonMobil is still on track to post more than $18 billion in pure profit just from April, May, and June alone.
Wow, that's good news. They're continuing their record profits off the back of, well, American consumers and consumers across the world. Nice going, Exxon.
And since Republicans falsely blame President Biden for high gas prices, surely now they will credit Biden for the drop.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
Meanwhile, the climate crisis that is caused by burning fossil fuels continues. Dangerous heat waves are engulfing parts of China, U.S., and Europe this week, with hundreds of cities hitting record or near-record triple-digit high temperatures, which is especially dangerous and deadly in regions that don't have widespread air conditioning. Globally, heat wave-related deaths have quadrupled since 1990.
Wow.
And yes, here in the U.S., summers are becoming hotter, longer, and more dangerous. That's according to a new analysis by the nonprofit research group Climate Central. Heat waves are arriving earlier in the year and are more frequent and more intense. In more than half of the cities analyzed, extreme heat days now arrive at least a week earlier on average than in the 1970s. In 2021, the western U.S. was 4 degrees hotter than it was in the 1970s. In Reno, Nevada, summer temperatures have risen 11 degrees Fahrenheit on average since 1970. Man-made global warming is to blame, but also urban sprawl, which has expanded heat-absorbing asphalt. All of that heat energy also increases extreme weather disasters like droughts, hurricanes, and wildfires.
Well, I think this summer we don't have to convince anyone about how terrible it's getting. It has been so hot across so much of the country. Maybe the upside, people are beginning to understand the consequences of their actions?
In Europe, a new study finds that Spain and Portugal are seeing their driest climate in at least 1,200 years. The researchers say that a weather pattern that blocks storm fronts, known as the Azor High, has tripled since 1980 because of man-made climate change. The historic drought has severe long-term implications for food production, tourism, and potentially even worse. That's according to climate researcher Carl Friedrich Schlüchner on DW News.
We see fundamental shifts in the climatic conditions as a result of global climate change. In this regional context, it means if we don't manage to prevent the worst impacts of climate change, they might turn into deserts.
Well,
at this point, maybe we deserve it.
In other news, deforestation of the Amazon rainforest in Brazil has hit a new record high, according to the Brazilian Space Agency. Satellite images taken between January and June show 1,500 square miles of forest has been destroyed in the last 6 months. Deforestation has surged under the right-wing administration of Jair Bolsonaro, and this matters because climate scientists say preserving the Amazon rainforest is crucial for combating the climate crisis.
Yeah, in fact, the Amazon rainforest used to decrease carbon in the atmosphere for the first time, I believe. Last year, the Amazon emitted more carbon dioxide than it absorbed.
Yep. And finally, a bit of good news.
Thank you.
In California, Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom has signed the nation's most sweeping law to phase out single-use plastics and packaging waste from polystyrene and other plastics that eventually degrade into tiny toxic particles that pollute the environment and are increasingly found in human blood, tissue, and organs. The law also shifts the economic burden of waste disposal to plastic producers and packagers.
Well, that is good news, but as promised, everything else, pretty bad.
Yeah.
For much more on all of these terrible stories and more, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Bad to the bone. Bad.
Seems like everything is bad news these days. Sorry about that.
It does. But hey, at least there's, you know, some movement on plastic
there's
pollution
plastic
in California.
Thing. Sure.
That's a thing.
That's good. That's worth the whole hour waiting for. Thank you, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's Nothing But Good News program, you can download it or any other anytime for free at bradblog.com. All of that is made possible by you good people who are kind enough, generous enough to stop by bradblog.com/donate to make a one-time donation or sign up for a monthly automated subscription of any amount you like to help Desi and I stay on the airwaves to help bring you the bad news, but with a smile. You can drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. I will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone. Bad.